Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We got a loaded show today. As always, we got Chris Sanders, Run TMC, coming on. We got Emory Hunt, football game plan, CBS Sports. We'll get him to talk about the All-Star games that he's been. We got Parker Kelly over here rocking it out.
What's going on?
Hey, man. It is what it is, you know, here in the building. Man, it was a great opportunity to see a lot of different prospects over the last couple of weeks. You know, shaking so many hands, being, you know, around so many people, I acquired a little cough there. So bear with me, folks, as we try to work through this thing. But, yeah, man, great opportunity to see a lot of prospects at the Shrine Week, see prospects at the Senior Bowl, got to mix and mingle and catch up with a lot of friends, man. And, you know, we got to spend some time with Brian Callahan in Denton, Texas, at North Texas University, you know, during the Shrine Bowl practices, and then got one-on-one with Mike Borgonzi. So we'll kind of look at some of the things from that. I did have a story that posted last week on ESPN.com in regards to their quarterback search. The roster building process is really interesting to me. And obviously, Mike Borgonzi, he's going to be in charge of that. And you look at just the way he approaches it. And I thought it was interesting because I asked him, you know, about the building the roster. You know, I'm like, hey, you know, are you of the school where you get the quarterback and you build around the quarterback, or do you like to get the roster and drop the quarterback into a built roster? And he, from his experience in Kansas City, you know, that's what they did. They built the roster. They traded for Alex Smith, and they had him, and they became competitive. They were a playoff team. In fact, they got to the divisional round of the playoffs, and, you know, they were a threat, a big-time threat. And then they said, you know what, we're going to take it to another level. They traded up. They went to 10, and they grabbed Patrick Mahomes, and the rest is kind of history. They've been to an AFC championship game literally every year that Mahomes has started, which is wild. But that's the degree of success they had. But that's one way, you know, when you have the quarterback, you drop him into a ready-made roster, and that's a good recipe, but you have to be able to build the roster. Mike Borgonzi, he told me that he wants to build the roster from the front back. He wants to take care of the trenches. He wants to make sure that the O-line, D-line is fortified, and then, you know, kind of work from there. But obviously, if there's a player that's of a skill position that you just can't pass up, they won't pass him up. But it kind of gave insight into how they're going to approach this thing. Now, he, in addition to the one-on-one at the Senior Bowl, he actually did a media scrum, and he talked about just, you know, some of the needs that they need to adjust. Here's Mike Borgonzi from the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama.
I mean, listen, you can go through the roster, and we're going through, and I'm meeting with the coaches now, and we have some holes to fill along, you know, offensive line. That would be number one. And then just depth level across the whole team right now. You know, creating competition is going to be the biggest thing, whether it's through free agency, through the draft. It might be a guy that we sign off the street or the workout guy. But really just, you know, we want to build the fronts first, offensive, defensive lines, and then build depth along the perimeter. Yeah.
They want to build the front first. That's right there. He said it. You know, they want to get that part of it taken care of. Trey Smith, a free agent. Now, they said they're going to be selective in free agency, but that doesn't mean they're not going to be active. And I think Trey Smith is a guy. Dylan Radins is a free agent. You know, maybe they bring him back. They're going to have to look at some things on that side. And building the trenches, it's not something that's just going to happen in free agency, right? You had Scott Fuchs, who was there at the Senior Bowl. He was coaching the American team, helping coach the O-line. So you got some firsthand experience. Carson Vincent is a guy that obviously, you know, I've been high on. There's a bunch of prospects there at the Senior Bowl that stood out. But Vincent is the HBCU. You know, he's out of Alabama A&M, and he was an outstanding, I don't want to say contributor, participant down there in the Senior Bowl, especially like the one-on-ones and things like that. So you have those. Gray Zabel, who really stood out. Now, he played what, center and guard, and he was really good. You have another guy in Miles Frazier who played three different positions. He won Offensive Lineman of the Week, and, you know, he played guard and tackle, LSU kid. He's a South Jersey guy. So shout out Miles Frazier out of LSU. So there's a lot of Emory Jones as well. You know, there's a lot of prospects that this team could go to. And one of the things that Brian Callahan has said repetitively is that, hey, you know, yes, we have the number one pick. This is Callahan. You know, he said, we have the number one pick, but we also are going to pick at the top of other rounds as well. So there are going to be opportunities to get higher picks, higher prospects, and in the different rounds. We know the third round pick is gone by way of the LeJarius Sneed trade. But still, I think this is a team that they're not that far off from being competitive. You drop a playmaker or two here, you get that O-line right, and you get yourself another edge rusher, and there's a bunch of them out there. No, Myles Garrett is not a trade that I think the Titans should make. I don't think that bringing him in would be good for them in the long term, because I would imagine he's going to leave after his deal is up. So you don't want to have anything there.
He's definitely gone. Yeah. You don't put something out like that on social media and not leave.
Oh, no, I'm talking about for the Titans to trade for.
Right, right.
So he will be a free agent, I believe it's in 2 years. And
yeah.
So when he becomes a free agent, I mean, obviously he's not going to win the Super Bowl with the Titans. So then he becomes a free agent, and you're going to see him go to Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, one of those teams. So you're trading away draft capital for what would in essence be a 1 or 2 year rental. And B, this team has already established the fact that draft picks are the top currency. So I don't think that's happening. Let's get that out. But you look at some of the other things that they could do. Quarterback, okay? So what are you going to do there? You got the Cam Ward. You got Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders wooed them at the Shrine. They have not gotten a chance to meet with Cam Ward. So I will say this, right? Anybody who tells you that the Titans know what they know what the Titans are doing, hey, the Titans are going to go with Cam Ward. The Titans are going to go with Shedeur. The Titans are going to go with Abdul Carter. The Titans are going to go with Travis Hunter. They don't know. So it's all just hearsay at this point right now. They don't know. They haven't met with these guys. And I know from talking to Mike Borgonzi, those one-on-ones, those top 30 visits, the combine visits, that is something that's going to have a lot to do with the direction that they go, because he's very big on reading body language. He's very big on feeling energy. He's very big on vibes. He's very big on that person-to-person conversation. So to say that they're going to go a certain direction right now before they've done any of that with any of these guys outside of Shedeur Sanders is just, it's blasphemy. So don't listen to any of that, folks. I will also say this. One of the things that in talking to Borgonzi, he discussed with me Alex Smith and the importance of having a guy like that. He said, yeah, you can have a bridge quarterback, but if you're going to have one and it works, Alex Smith is the type where it was the perfect situation, because you had an older guy. He understood the assignment. He understood the situation. They went and got Patrick Mahomes. He knew that his time was going to be limited. He made the best of his time, was productive on the field, but also was involved in developing Patrick Mahomes. Now, look, that's not Alex Smith's job, just as it wasn't Ryan Tannehill's job, just as it wasn't Aaron Rodgers' job, you know, to develop Jordan Love, and it wasn't Brett Favre's job to develop. It's none of their jobs. But if you could find a guy that is willing to do that at the same time, you're in a good situation. So that's the one bridge situation that will work for this Titans team. And, again, that's if they draft a quarterback with the first overall pick. Who knows what they're going to do there. But if they just go regular bridge, I mean, look, I've heard anywhere from Aaron Rodgers to Sam Darnold to, you know, Justin Fields. There's different options. Aaron Rodgers, I think, is a name you probably want to keep an eye on if he comes available. I could see that happening here. Just you look at the past, the ties, you know, obviously the Chad Brinker and the Green Bay days, but also just the way it's all set up. Aaron Rodgers played well, actually, down the stretch. Now, I don't know what the money will look like. Obviously, you know, so many people are up in the air about the circus that supposedly comes with Shedeur Sanders. Well, look, you get the whole three-ring, Ringnum, Barnum, and Bailey circus with Aaron Rodgers. So if you're not about that life for Shedeur, then you don't need to be about that for Aaron Rodgers. Me personally, I think either one is one something that I will welcome because it's more eyes on work and it's just more things to talk about. And I think both of those guys are good players still. So we'll see what happens there. But we did all this talk about quarterback. We didn't even mention Will Levis. Very interesting, right? He's the one quarterback that's on the roster. Jim Wyatt got to catch up with him at the Super Bowl, and I thought he made some good points in that conversation. Here you go right here.
Taking the good with the bad and making sure that I'm taking note of all the things that happened and most importantly trying to clean up the things that could have made the season go a little smoother if I were able to clean up beforehand. So a lot of good, a lot of things that I think I was able to improve on from last year, and a lot of stuff that I know is up to the level of what needs to, you know, happen as an NFL quarterback, and a lot of throws too that a lot of NFL quarterbacks, you know, weren't able to make, and I think that those plays give me the confidence to go and improve on the things that I need to propel me further in this league. So I'm looking forward to actually meeting him in person when I get back in the building next week, and then it was cool just hitting him back and forth. The first thing I noticed was the 617 area code, so that's close to my heart, so yes. Had a little talk there, but seems like a great dude. Obviously he's done some amazing things with the Chiefs, and looking forward to getting to know him and seeing what he's got planned and what he sees for the vision of this team. You know, it doesn't change the process. I feel like I think I have a really good schedule and outlook on this next couple months before we start up OTAs, and I'm going to put myself in a great position to be healthy and, you know, be ready to play, and hopefully I can do whatever I can to show them that I can and should still be the quarterback for this team. And I feel like it's in their best interest, and they got to do their due diligence to make sure that they know who's out there and evaluate who they feel like they should evaluate. So it doesn't offend me at all. And I know going 3-14 doesn't get you your job security any year and for any team. So I know how it goes, and all I can do is put my head down and work to again show them that, you know, I can still be this team's quarterback.
So a part of putting his head down and working is working with Jordan Palmer, who he worked with before the draft, back when he was, you know, the 33rd pick in the draft. So, look, Jordan Palmer is a renowned quarterback developer. He's someone that could possibly help Will Levis. It's interesting because it's not really the mechanics that's the issue with Levis. It's a lot of it is just, you know, as Brian Callahan said, taking the classroom work to the practice field and practice field to the games. And that's not really happening. And I think that's something that he has to be able to do, the mental aspect. So I don't know. Maybe Jordan Palmer could help him there. I know Ryan Williams, his previous coach there, you know, has been a good one. So we'll see what happens there with Levis. One other thing before we get out of here. I got to talk with Darrell Colbert, who is the quarterbacks coach working with both Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. And he had some really good insight just as far as like how they're competing, their personalities. He said, you know, don't look too much into these videos, you know, where it seems like Cam is, you know, the more aggressive of the two. Shedeur is just a different cat. You know, he's just a more relaxed, nonchalant, laid back type of guy. But make no mistake about it, when it's time to get the work done, there is a level of intensity. So it's going to be cool watching all that play out. Folks, I tried to get it set up for you so we could go back down there and do a video and all of that. But unfortunately, that is probably not going to happen. But we will have some inside access at this combine. So definitely make sure you stay tuned for that. I want to really introduce people to Cam Ward. I'm going to introduce myself first, obviously. But, you know, looking to get some behind-the-scenes time with Cam Ward. Got to do that with Shedeur Sanders at Shrine. We'd love to do more of that. So definitely make sure you continue to stay tuned. We'll do everything we can to bring you all the content possible, access and things like that. So stay tuned as we work along the way. And we're going to have the prospects for you as we continue talking with TD the draft series. So make sure you're ready for us there. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We will be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
The music fades, the lights dim. And now, for your Chicago Bulls, starting at small forward, out of Duke by way of Wow, Sudan, number 9, Luol Deng.
And now, one of the greatest track athletes of all time, winning the long jump, winning the 100-meter dash, Carl Lewis.
That joker said, and the Rockets red. He said, uh-oh.
Y'all help me now. Y'all help me now. Man, you better turn that mic off.
He said, uh-oh.
How many athletes is going to sing the national anthem?
Yeah, that was wild on his part to
come
do
on,
that.
Man. No. What's cracking with you, boss?
Hey, nothing, man. Just getting done that All-Star game circuit.
Yeah.
Did the Shrine Week, did Senior Bowl. It was great. Oh, I got to go down to – I went down to Exos in Frisco.
Okay. Nice.
Well, it's in Plano, Texas now. I saw Matthew Golden, the Texas receiver, Luther Burden. I got to see those guys. Amarian Hampton. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Matthew Golden is a well put together. Luther Burden.
Does he remind you of D Mace a little bit?
No. I think D Mace is probably like. It didn't.
Totally different. Okay.
Yeah. It was different. But Luther Burden, he was actually longer than I thought. Like, I didn't.
Oh, for real?
You see
okay.
him on film and you see him, you know, you watch. And he looks like a more of a squatty type of player, but he was actually he has some length with him. So I thought that was
nice.
Impressive.
That's what's up, man.
Man, Amarian Hampton, the running back out of North Carolina, and I know the Titans don't need a running back. I'm not saying for Titans fans. I'm not saying, but he just man, he was something. I just missed Abdul Carter. He was coming in that night, so I missed him. But anyhow, it was pretty cool.
What about that cat that they're talking about, Jack Beck from TCU?
Yeah, no, he was impressive at the Senior Bowl. People have started to compare him to Puka Nacua, like we're just a pure football player. You know what I mean? Not going to impress you on the testing side of things, but just a pure football player.
Right.
Hey, great story. Well, I don't want to say great. It's a tragic story. You know, he lost his brother in New Orleans.
That's right.
But
that's
then
right,
he turned right. around and he had the catch to the game winning catch. So that was cool that he was able to do that. So,
wow.
Yeah. No, it was a cool experience down there. I know you. I spent some time at the Senior Bowl as a player. I'm curious because the Titans had, you know, Perry Carter there coaching the special teams,
mm-hmm.
who is, you know, one of the assistant defensive assistants with the Titans. And then they had assistant offensive line coach Scott Fuchs. I want to say it sounds
yeah, –
you could pronounce it a different way, but I'm not going to do that.
I know. I got you.
They got, you know, hands-on experience with the players. So I want you to kind of reflect on the time that you had, just what the coaches benefit from, you know, and how that was with you and being around those coaches there.
You know, just watching your every move and to see if you fit – you know, the identity of their team. Because when I went down to the Senior Bowl, you know, they knew about me a little bit, but I was still an unknown because, the word was out, is he just a track guy trying to play football? So I went down there like I was in an audition. I'm taking names. I'm jumping into one-on-one. I'm going on 7-on-7. I don't care. I ain't taking a break. And I had to prove myself. I wanted to prove myself that I can do releases. I wanted to prove myself that I can go up and make the tough catches in a tight window. I had to prove myself that I can get off the jam, that I can prove to them that I can get out of my cuts. So what coaches are looking for as a receiver coach or a special teams guy or edge rusher. You're looking for the guy who fits the mold of what you want. And when I went down to the Senior Bowl, never talked to the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans, never even talked to them, but they had me on their radar. Why? Because I fit the mold of what they wanted to do.
What was your approach to one-on-ones and that? Because I love watching, you know, receiver DB ones, but O-line D-line is actually, to me, even more exciting. But, you know, what was your approach to that?
How dare you? You know, and I say that in respectful ways because how dare you try to, you know, come up and press me and try to, you know, it's like Imano, that it, basically what one-on-one coverage in one-on-one is saying, who's the better man? That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's who's the better man. And I got it to a point to where if somebody came up and pressed me, it was based in insult to where they said, you know what? I'm better than you, and you can't do nothing about it. And that's the approach that Deion Sanders took. That I don't care what they're doing over there, they can play, but I'm going man to man against their best coverage because I'm going to shut them down. So when I get in one on one, my whole mentality was, how dare you? And I did everything in my power to try to beat that guy.
Yeah, and that's the point, right? It's like I took that personally. You know, you come in, that's the point. It's just like the Jordan meme, you know. It's an opportunity just to showcase this, just the dog that you have in you.
Absolutely.
That's what I love about the one-on-one periods. Were there any other parts of Senior Bowl week that kind of, when you were there, like are most memorable?
Yeah, I like, and I know this may sound kind of goofy, but I like the interviews. And the reason why I like the interviews is because you get a chance to feel the heartbeat of the team. I mean all the teams that I met with, I knew right away if I mesh with the coach. I knew right away that if this is going to be a good relationship, because you knew right away, because is this dude is just throwing fluff or just saying good things or just, you know, pumping up, check this out, pumping up the team as opposed to making it relationally. So if you're just saying, okay, it's all about, okay, making the / Houston Oilers look good, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to step back a little bit because you're just talking about a product and not making relational. So if you say, okay, you know what, let's come in here and let's build together to make the Houston Oilers / Titans look good, now we're talking, because you make it about we instead of me.
Yeah, no, great point right there. One of the guys I remember at the Senior Bowl was Cooper Kupp. And
oh,
I came
God.
Out of there like, wow, this dude is, man, he's tremendous. And he went and he had an outstanding career with the Rams, triple crown winner. But, you know, as always, the younger, cheaper thing is what these organizations want. They got Puka Nacua, and he's running the same things that Cooper Kupp was. And
same
now
thing.
They're moving Cooper Kupp on. He's on the trading block. What are your thoughts on Cooper Kupp at this point, and is he someone that if you were the Titans, you would pursue?
You know, I would, because you want to bring a guy. Everybody talks about veteran guys coming in. Yeah, you want to bring veteran guys, but you want to make sure that he's a good fit for your scheme and what you're doing. Because we say, oh, get a veteran guy, and he's – no, we brought Carl Pickens, no disrespect. We brought Carl Pickens in, and it was a disaster. But you got to bring a guy in here that fits the mold, that wants to teach these young guys, that brings a level of experience. Because say if – I'm just throwing this out there. Just say you go get a rookie quarterback in Shedeur Sanders or Ward from Miami, or you keep Will Levis. Now you bring Cooper Kupp in that can say, okay, you know what? When I'm running in a slot, when I'm going in motions, let's both have an eye to where when I get open, you throw it to where I need it to be. So now he can be the quarterback of running wide receivers. And then you have a quarterback that they're on the same page, and you have a guy that's a chain mover that has a lot of experience.
Do you think Cooper Kupp, what do you think he has left, though?
He has a lot left. He may not be a speed burner and run the post and run the go routes, but when it's 3rd and 15, he's going to run those digs, those little short, you know, button hooks and all those things that you want a guy to keep the chains moving. Because the thing about it is, just say if we're playing the Kansas City Chiefs and I had Cooper Kupp on my team and I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, what I'm going to do when it's 3rd and 5 and 3rd and 6, I'm going to feed it to him as a wide receiver to keep those chains moving, to keep the time of possession. That's how valuable this dude is. He may not beat you on the post. He might not beat you in the go route. But when the game's on the line, when it's time for you to move the chains, that guy is totally dependable. And that's why he's so special in this league.
Does it surprise you the Rams want to get rid of him?
But you know what, man, at the end of the day, if they let Jerry Rice go, if they let some great name guys go, they won 3 or 4 Super Bowls, nobody's expendable. It's just, okay, it's the cheaper guy. They're basically doing the same thing, so one of us got to go. So what they're going to let go? The older and the most expensive guy's got to go. And that's just the nature of the beast. It's not a talent move. It's a business move to be like, okay, I got somebody that does exactly what he does, so I can get rid of this money and get the same kind of production.
Yeah, the 49ers did that once upon a time. They had a younger, cheaper option by the name of Terrell Owens.
Oh, my
and,
God.
They said, Jerry, you got to go. It's funny. Whenever I think of Jerry Rice and T.O., and I remember telling Corey Davis this story when I was telling him, like, Corey, you got to ask for the ball more. But I told him this story. I said, you know, it was 49ers against the Bears. They won the game, and in the process of winning the game, Terrell Owens set the record for receptions in the game. It was 21 or 22.
Yeah, and 22.
Again, they won the game. You know who was on the sideline throwing a fit because he wasn't getting the ball enough? Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice.
And so I said, I said, look, and you know, you never would call Jerry Rice a diva, but he is one, A. But B, he was, pandering for the football and mad because he wasn't getting it. So point of the story is, Corey, you should ask for the football too. That's what I was driving home with him. But I think of that story every time, you know, T.O. and Jerry Rice are looped together.
Yeah, I mean, but you just have a receiver that's an alpha male that's been in position to where, you know, when the game's on line, he wants the ball. And I think we got him. I want to make sure that sometimes I put in the right perspective, because in a fan's eye, we look at that as selfish. No, I worked hard. I caught the jugs. I did everything I need to put myself in position to receive the football. So maybe once or twice, more than that, I need to get the rock just a little bit.
And you know, the other thing that goes into that is I want to win. And I know the best way that we can win, one of the best ways that we can win, is if you get me the football and let me do what I do. You know, so it's definitely not selfish, not at all. I mean, look, if you got a receiver that doesn't want the football, then you don't have a receiver. That's really the bottom line. Speaking of wanting the football, DeAndre Hopkins, that's one of the things that he mentioned. You had talked earlier about the culture and those types of things. I remember talking to Mike Borgonzi at the Senior Bowl, and that's something that he said that he wants to make sure is established, a culture, an expectation. And he said, you know, when we traded, we meaning the Chiefs, when we traded for Hopkins and he got here, like, I don't know what was going on there in Tennessee, but he had to practice every day. Like, that was a standard. He said, you see Travis Kelce? He doesn't miss practice. He practices every day. If Travis Kelce could practice every day, so can DeAndre Hopkins. That was the standard. Wow. And I love that he mentioned that. Woo. I thought it was really, really telling, just as far as like to let people know, like, he's coming in to be a boss, to establish an expectation. But nevertheless, at the Super Bowl, Radio Row, or that was the media day, I think it was.
Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins, he said that, you know, they weren't really calling plays for him. He lost the love of the game, this, that, and the third. What are your thoughts on those comments?
He said, what about the Titans?
Yes, he said they weren't calling plays to get him the football. Yeah. He pulled himself out. Now, mind you, that after that game and that week, that following week, he said, I was just doing what the coaches told me to do.
Wow.
But now the truth is coming out. Hey, I pulled myself out of the game. And then also he said that he lost love for the game being in that Tennessee locker room and a part of the Titans organization.
Man, those are big words. I mean, when you have a big name wide receiver like Hopkins comes here, and then, you know, at the beginning he said that wasn't the case, and then now he comes out and says it, and saying that he lost love for the game. You know, why was it? Did he feel appreciated? Didn't he feel appreciated? Or, you know, I know he wasn't getting the ball like he wants to, but he had to understand that when your quarterback's struggling, he's not going to get it to you. So I think, in my opinion, they were trying to protect the quarterback. But I think as a receiver, and I'm not putting my words in his mouth, that when you hear a receiver say he lost love for the game, basically he's saying that that organization didn't appreciate me. I mean, because, you know, the reason why I say that is because at times I felt like that. You know, and I'm going to be straight up honest with you. When we went to the Super Bowl, you know, we had a lot of great receivers, and we had a great running back in Eddie George, and our identity was running the football. But my emotions sometimes would tell me to say, man, am I even appreciated? But what I had to do to settle in my mind to say, you know what, it's not about them. It's about this, or it's about us players in this locker room, and it's about us getting to the Super Bowl. And once I settled that, then I knew that I was appreciated. So that's how I kind of handle it. Mm.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
How do you feel that way?
How do you think, so if that was the case, like how do you think that impacted, not Calvin Ridley, because he's, you know, established.
Yeah.
Probably not Nick Westbrook and Keeney. I would say probably not Treylon Burks. But how do you think that impacted guys like Bryce Oliver, guys like Jaquan Jackson, those types?
Yeah, I mean, but see, here's the thing about when you're talking about some of those guys that you named, they're still fairly young, so they can still, you know, still learn how to. It's just a hard question to answer because, you know, when you're talking about Hopkins, a guy that came from Houston is catching 100-something balls, you know, a year, and then go come here and you're only catching like 30 or 40 balls. That's tough because you put in the work, you know, you work hard on all these things, and then you got a young guys that are working, but they haven't got to that echelon yet, so they're just happy they get 2 and 3 attempts a game because they're just trying to make the team. So it's kind of different scenarios, different things. But at the end of the day, it's all about feeling appreciated, man. So, you know, it's just a tough question to kind of answer.
That's interesting, the feeling appreciated part of it. Yeah. Calvin Ridley, he's pretty much like that's what's on the roster right now. NWI, free agent, we'll see what happens there. What direction do you think this team should go receiver-wise?
They got to get another playmaker in here. I mean, I know we talked about Jack Beck. He's more like a slot guy, when I say slot guy, that's not a bad thing. But, you know, when we said it, because me and you know that. But just look at some of the guys that's out there free agent wise. I mean, you got T. Higgins. I don't know what's going on with that. You got Chris Godwin from the Bucks. You got Marquise Brown from the Chiefs. You gotta get another speed guy, you know, to really, to help really. And then, you know, you got some guys in the draft, you know, the guy from Arizona, McMillan, and then you got Burden, the third from Missouri. You got guys like that. You got the guy from Ohio State, you know, Emeka Igwa. I can't pronounce his name.
Emeka Ibuka.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And then the guy that you talked about from Texas, you got Matthew Golden. So they're going to have to get some guys in here. NWI, outstanding. I mean, he's a touchdown machine, but you got to get some guys in here that's going to put fear in a defensive coordinator. If you was a defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans team and you took Calvin Ridley out, who would scare you at receiver?
Nobody.
That's what I'm saying. But if you put a guy like T. Higgins in there, that's kind of scary. You got Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
Scary, but he's kind of hurt a little bit. But then you got these guys that I just named in the draft. Those guys put a little bit of fear in a defensive coordinator, but those other guys really don't, and I say that in a respectful way.
Yeah, Godwin's interesting because I'm looking at his contract here, and they're void years on his deal.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly what the case is going to be there. But, yeah, I mean, if he shakes free, that's someone you definitely want to look at. You just got to be cautious of that injury, you know, that
he's
coming
off.
I know, that's the difference. Yeah. So if you had to pick a number one receiver in this draft, are you going Tet McMillan or what are you – well, let me ask you this. Travis Hunter, right? He's on the board. You stay put at pick number one. He's on the board.
Yeah.
What's your elevator pitch for Travis Hunter?
I would love to have him, but this is just my opinion. You correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to put him more at cornerback, but have packages for him, you know, on offense. I want to get a guy that's going to play 50 to 60 snaps on offense. I mean, and you know, we got some of these young guys that can play, but – you know, you have to get somebody that's going to compliment Calvin Ridley, because if you take Calvin Ridley out, then who do you have? You got to get a guy that's explosive. And one of the guys that I love, that guy from Arizona, McMillan, was 6'5", 212. I mean, you know, his acceleration is amazing. So those are one of the guys that if I had a chance to get, I would eyeball. Why? Because he brings a threat to opposing defense. He means a threat to a defense or a secondary, and he's consistently made plays. So those are one of the guys I really would target.
Interesting. Yeah, McMillan is very attractive as a player.
I just don't know how to pronounce his first name.
Yeah, that's why I just say Tet. You know, Tet McMillan, and everybody knows who we're talking about. So
Yeah.
What if, okay, final thing, the number one pick. Obviously, you got Shedeur Sanders, you got Cam Ward, you talk about Hunter, Abdul Carter. Where should this team go?
You know, it's tough, and this is where it's going to depend on. If they go and get some quarterbacks quarterback in free agency like a Sam Darnold or a Justin Fields, then now my focus is, okay, I got to get the most – how can I say this? I got to get the most out of this pick to where it's going to be the face of the franchise. So if Hunter's sitting there, I'm taking him. If I got Shadur or Cam Ward, I'm going with one of them. So it's going to be interesting. But if it was me, I would trade down, acquire some picks, build up this roster, and I go that route.
How far back would you trade, though?
I wouldn't go past five. I mean, I would not go past five. If you get into the 7, 8, and 9, then you're going to get a good player, but you're not going to get a player that's going to impact, you know, this whole draft. So it's gonna be interesting. That's why, you know what, that's why I'm so excited about what's going on, because I don't have an answer. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And I'm not afraid to say I don't have an answer. But at the end of the day, if you just get one player but you don't build up this roster, what happens if that one player gets hurt? Now you're in trouble. You have to build up this roster like D-Mace always talks about. Yeah, you may have some explosive players, but what if those players go down? You got to have some depth in this roster that if somebody gets hurt, they step up and they can make some plays. And that's what's the difference with these two teams that's been in the Super Bowl. They have depth at the position, and it's guys that you don't even heard about, but they still have that same impact.
And one of the things that both of those teams did, they built a roster and dropped the quarterback in there. And that question, I asked Mike Borgonzi that question, and he talked about it. He said, man, listen, you build a team. Ideally, what we want to do is build this team from the front back.
Yep.
Start it in the trenches and fortify them. Because I asked him straight up. I said, look, man, you know, I know you've been in a situation where you guys had Alex Smith. You had a playoff team. Mm-hmm. You built the roster up, then you dropped the quarterback in there. Is that the way that you always think is the right way? Because you look at Brian Callahan and what his experience is, they dropped the quarterback in there and then built the team around him. And he said, no, we're going to start in the trenches. We're going to build from the front back. And I think that's something to definitely take heed to as you start to look at this. But there are so many directions this team could go. If they trade back, in my opinion, you can't go back past four.
No,
because there's four premier players in this.
That's what I'm
saying.
Know,
and it looks like Abdul Carter is pretty much a lock to go to the Browns if, you know, they're able to trade Myles Garrett and if the Titans don't take him. So, you know, that's one that's off the table. So now you're looking at, okay, the Giants, Titans, and Patriots, who's going to get Hunter, who's going to get the quarterbacks, you know, and obviously we know the Patriots aren't going to go for the quarterbacks, right? So there's just a lot of ways this could play out. I hate this, man, because we got the ESPN NFL Nation mock draft, and everyone else who's had the number one pick, like, oh, yeah, Caleb Williams. We know he's going to be number one. You know what I mean? This year, we do not know who's going to be number one.
I don't know.
I don't want to get it wrong, so hopefully, you know, I'll be spot on. I wouldn't be mad, though, if I pick somebody and they trade back and they end up taking a different one. But it's, there's so many directions.
But that's what makes it so – that's what makes it so exciting, TD, because even though we're expert in our fields, we still don't know. Because there might be somebody – somebody might be jumping from 12. You just – I don't know. Nobody knows. Because I'm not going to – I know a little experience, but nobody knows, because somebody may make a sweet deal and say, I give you all these number ones, I give you all kind of players. And all of a sudden, a team jumps up, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, it's always that – every in every draft, it's always that, what?
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see a what this year. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the Titans are going to do. But guess what? They're in prime position to do something special. That's what the good part about it is.
Yeah, so we shall see. Well, yeah, man, I appreciate it. Some really good talk there. And we'll keep this thing moving.
Absolutely. But before I go, man, I was watching the Jeffersons. And, the Pops was touched, dad was talking, whatever. So this guy walks in with an afro, and he had a tight suit on with some skinny jeans. And my wife started cheering, and she's like actually in tears. She's like, I cannot believe it. She had, you know, fanning herself. She's like, I cannot believe TD is on the Jeffersons. I said, baby, that's not TD. That's Lionel Jefferson.
Well, how about this? I was in Mobile. And I was walking with one of my guys from another network, and we stopped and we saw a statue. And they said, "I didn't know that dude Chris, you do the talking with TD with. I didn't know he had a statue down here in Mobile. He's from Mobile. I didn't know." I said, "Nah, he's from Denver. That statue ain't Chris Sanders. That's Hank Aaron."
Man, get off my phone.
This is Jefferson, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We're going to keep this thing going. We got to work through the Senior Bowl, Shrine, and all the college all-star circuits. So what better way to do that than someone who has been at all of them, one of the few who have been at all of them, and that's Emory Hunt, football game plan, CBS Sports. You like that Mars Day music coming in, huh?
you always pick the right tune, man.
I said, I'm going to switch it up from Walking in the Rain. We'll go with the, Yo, he be killing me with that laugh. But I want to just right from the top, get into just the games that you have been at up into Shrine. Some of the guys that stood out, some of the prospects that no one knows about. We know that that's one of the many specialties that you have.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was at – in 2 weeks, I'll be at the HBCU Legacy Bowl, which will be the eighth and final All-Star game on the circuit. And so, you know, my journey starts back in May at the East-West Bowl in Canada, where they had their All-Star game. So that's why I first got introduced to Taylor Elgersma, the quarterback from Wilfrid Laurier. And actually, he came into that All-Star game as arguably the fourth graded Canadian quarterback. There was two others that were really highly touted, and I just kept watching him throw the football. I was like, man, he's actually spinning the ball well and consistently. So for me, he is the one that really stood out from that game. And so it was good to see him then get the opportunity to play at the College Gridiron Showcase, which is the first week of January, and then after that, the Tropical Bowl, and then after that, the Senior Bowl. So it's been fascinating to watch his journey from Canadian quarterback, which is one of those anomalies up there. They don't really draft them. The last one went in the first round 2 years ago was Trey Ford, who was phenomenal. That was rare to have one go in the first round. And Elgersma, to me, is someone that could see his name called high in the CFL draft. But after what he did this week in Mobile, this past week, you know, that's someone that could also see him, you know, find his way into NFL camp, if not drafted on day three, if we're being honest. But that's one of the bigger takeaways I got from the smaller All-Star games, was just following the journey of the Canadian quarterback, Taylor Elgersma.
Were there any receivers there that stood out to you at all?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it felt like a family affair the whole time, because now in December, we're getting into the first run of these 2025 All-Star games. In December, at the FCS Bowl, is when I first saw Michael Love. And if the last name sounds familiar, he is the brother of Julian Love, who plays for the Seattle Seahawks. Mm. Mike Love is a receiver from the Long Island University, and he's also one of the better kickoff returners and punt returners in the class. So he had a fantastic week there. He got a call up to the Tropical Bowl and performed well there. Now, while I was at the Tropical Bowl, I saw Jordan Bly. If that last name sounds familiar, that's Dre Bly's son.
Wow.
And one, Dre Bly still looks like he could play, but two, Jordan Bly had the best week of the receivers. I even tweeted out, I don't think he dropped the ball while he was there. Hmm. And he really didn't. He's someone that's about 5'9", 180. So he was out there making plays as if he was 6'2", 220. You know, and one more guy, sticking with the theme at the Tropical Bowl, Moose Muhammad. And if that name sounds familiar, that's Moose Muhammad's son. And he was out there as well, playing really well, too. Physical guy, not the fastest, but just like how Moose Muhammad used to play, ball up top, go and get it, snatch off the roof of the defensive back's head. He was playing the physical game really well. But it was cool to see those former NFL players' sons really stand out. And I have to give a shout-out defensive guy, Chuck Smith. His son, Chuck Smith IV, out of Villanova, was also at the Tropical Bowl and performed really well.
That's crazy. So, Moose Muhammad, Michigan State. We're here at the 102.5 The Game Studios. Another Michigan State dynamic all-star, all-pro receiver, Derek Mason. I'll have to tell him that his former teammate's son is working through the circuit. That's crazy. Makes you feel old, man.
It does. I mean, think about it. We saw Moose Muhammad's son, Dre Bly's son, and also Chuck Smith's son. And it's just wild to think about. These are the guys we remember going through this whole process, and now their sons are going through the process.
Yeah, and we're talking to Emory Hunt, football game plan, CBS Sports. I tell you, just staying with that theme at the Shrine, you know, you had R.J. Mickens, you had Rondi Gasson Jr. I mean, right. It just keeps going. And obviously Shiloh Sanders out there, you know, doing what he does. The Shrine, what were some of the standouts there?
when you look at the Shrine game, and we were there at TD, we saw how, you know, these receivers really stood out, and it was trying to, you know, that's always where everyone's focus is on skill players, but it was two defensive backs that really stood out. It was Noel Williams, and it was also out of Cal, and it was Kobe Bryant out of Kansas. Both guys, from the start of practice to it ended, balled out. I'm talking about one-on-one, team. Those are the situations where you saw them have tremendous success. And we know it's hard for a defensive back to really stand out in these things because they're heavily favoring the offense with, to use your term, those mad bohemian routes that these receivers run. So to watch Kobe Bryant and Noel Williams do a great job, it was fantastic. Also, the fact that Noel Williams and Ricky White out of UNLV, the receiver, were going back and forth, had some good battles, former teammates at UNLV. So it was good to see them go back and forth again. But it shows you how, you know, we may see the helmet and see Cal, but a lot of these guys have started elsewhere their journey, and we see them at the finished product. But there's talent all across the country, no matter what school you go to.
Were there anybody in the trenches that stood out to you at Shrine?
At Shrine, I would say Marcus Ware, the interior offensive lineman from Montana State. And it's good to see – what was fascinating about his story was the fact that we know him and Cam Miller and the other North Dakota State guys, they just played each other in the national championship, which was about 2 weeks ago, right? So they finished their season playing 16 games. And so we saw – matter of fact, we saw Montana State play in week zero in that upset win they got against New Mexico and finished at the end in the national title game. And the fact that Marcus Ware and other players from North Dakota State was in this All-Star game, having had that long season, it really stood out, spoke volumes. So Ware, to me, showed that he could handle the interior play as a pro prospect. You're trying to project where he can be. He could be a center. He could be a guard. He held his own and did exceptionally well there. And then in the Senior Bowl, I think everybody probably now knows the name Gray Zabel, of North Dakota State, and how well he played consistently down in, down out. And again, 16-game season plus a postseason is just remarkable to see that those guys didn't sit out, they didn't opt out, they stayed the course, played well, and raised their stock as a result.
Yeah, no, it's 100% right. Zabel, he really stood out. I think, and Rick Saratella, he said it best, man. The main difference was – in the trenches, right, especially the defensive line, like you really saw a difference between Shrine and Senior Bowl. Who were some of the edge guys that stood out to you at the Senior Bowl?
Wow. Like you think about the edge and how guys are rushing the passer. I can't remember his name, but I know he went to UCLA. But I will say he stood out. Oladejo, I believe that's his name, but I have a million names in my head.
Yeah.
But I know David Walker was one of them from Central Arkansas. And what was fascinating about him was the fact that he came in measured at 6 feet. So instantly people are wondering, well, does he have, you know, the requisite size? But, man, we always say size is not a skill. And you saw how the ball get off, the speed to power conversion, all of those things help supersede length and height. And so the fact that he was out there just, you know, beating these guys consistently with the same ball get off, the same ability to you know, run the hoop around it, so to speak, that's where he really elevated his stock. So seeing another small school guy, one of the top defensive players in the FCS, do his thing, it was excellent to see.
Yeah, I wanted – so you saw Jackson Dart. You saw Jalen Milroe. The week before, you saw, you know, Kyle McCord. You saw these different guys. When you look at – and it's funny because we joke about it, right? We say, you know, we talked about it in the group chat. There's like six or seven guys where, you know, every so period, you know, it's like Simba with the Lion King. You know, they're holding him up there. They're like, this is the guy. Jackson Dart is the latest one. But where do you have all of those guys, you know, when it comes to – because we know Shador and Cam Ward, that's a separate group. But where do you have those guys after them?
They are, to me, late day two, day three type selections. And there's nothing wrong with that. We've seen, I would say since COVID, we've seen how valuable the QB2 spot is. And in some cases, for some teams, QB3. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a capable backup quarterback that can step in for 2 to 3 games and play and hold a fourth down, you're dead in the water. And so I think these guys, this is a great year, and I say this a lot, but this is a great year for teams to elevate their QB2 on the roster. If you can't do that, then you're going to be, you know, you're going to be in trouble. And I think guys like Jackson Dart, guys like Kyle McCord, those type guys, if you get them in a 2-3 game stretch, they can execute the offense, they can keep the offense on pace, and they can have them have the team just hold the fort down and continue to move forward until the starter gets back.
So who do you have above, like, that group? You know, is it Will Howard? Is it Kyle McCord? Is it Jackson Dart? Who do you have as that number three? Is it Jalen Milroe?
It's Jalen Milroe because, again, if I'm going to gamble on a prospect, I'm going to gamble on a guy that can hit the home run. I'm always swing for the fences, and someone like Jalen Milroe is – he exemplifies that. He swings for the fences. And for that reference, I'm talking about his athleticism, his ability to turn a corner and house it. And here's the thing about Miro that people don't give him enough credit for. When you have the Campbell Award, and I'm an NFF member, National Football Foundation member, so I do have a College Football Hall of Fame vote, and I've gone to the William B. Campbell, which is the academic Heisman. I've gone to that award ceremony before when it's in New York City. And just to hear the majors and the GPAs that these dudes have. So just to be nominated is a big goal, and people celebrate it. So to actually win it, which Jalen Milroe did, shows you how smart he is, how dedicated to his craft is, and to be able to do that schoolwork while also playing starting quarterback at a Power 5 program at Alabama and playing at a high level speaks volumes to his coachability, his leadership, his ability to stay focused. We know he's a military kid. So all of that you can gamble on because you know the kid is good. He has the mental capability to do what he needs to do to get better because he has gotten better each and every season. What people forget about this year is that he was learning a new offense and under Kalen DeBoer, and that's where people need to give him credit. So if I'm gambling on somebody that could make it because he has shown he can, he's willing to do the work to improve, it's Jalen Milroe.
All right, so we got about 60 seconds. I want to give you a chance to – for the Titans, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, 60 seconds. Why? Who will you pick and why? Go.
Anyone could work because they're both great talents. And the reason why I feel like you can't go wrong with anyone, they have that dog in them. And both guys remind me of two former Tennessee Titans / Houston Oilers. You look at Shedeur, Warren Moon. You look at Cam Ward, Steve McNair. Case closed. Titans can't go wrong with this pick.
There you have it right there. Emory Hunt, Football Game Plan, CBS Sports, co-author of I Saw You Walking in the Rain. He and Orange Juice Jones got together on that one. Had to get that laugh in, man. It was good to see you on the circuit at Shrine and Senior Bowl, man. We'll see you at the Combine.
Looking forward to it, man. Appreciate your TD as always.
All right, for sure. So that was Emory Hunt, Football Game Plan, CBS Sports. You can catch him all over the place. Folks, you got your different draft people that you like. He is the best. He is the deepest. No one has the catalog that he has. His draft guide will be available on footballgameplan.com later on this draft season. So make sure you grab that deep at every position. So appreciate Emory for coming on. Appreciate Chris Sanders making it happen. Parker, great job filling in last week. Good job with this to this week. I know the coughs and everything, we're working around it, but I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Yes. The flu's going around anyway. So.
Yeah, no, it's the flu. Hopefully it's not the flu I have, but hey, man, we keep it going. There's no bad days, man. So we appreciate each of you for tuning in. Definitely make sure you check us out, Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get your fine listening material. Search Talking with TD, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate